Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Karwoski.
You're listening to The Social Network Show. I'm your host, Jane Karwoski, also known as Dr. J. Have you ever glanced into a bookstore or a library at story time? A group of fascinated children seated around a grown-up reading them an intriguing story? Today, it's my privilege to welcome Dr. Maria Tatar of Harvard's Folklore and Mythology Program, and we'll be joined, as usual, by Jim Nico, CEO of Social Network Intermedia. And Dr. Tatar has written several books on the Brothers Grimm, on fairy tales, and about the power of stories in childhood. She's also the editor of the annotated Brothers Grimm, the annotated Hans Christian Andersen, and the annotated Peter Pan. Why, you may well ask, is the Social Network Show interested in storytelling? Well, like many of you, when hearing of cases of merciless cyber harassment of youngsters by peers that even results in suicide or suicide attempts, we've wondered, how can kids be that mean? There is an obvious lack of empathy and compassion there, and our guest, Dr. Tatar, is a firm believer in the power of stories to develop character, empathy, and fellow feeling in us. Welcome back to the Social Network Show.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you back for coming back, and I hope I said happy on birthday, because I try to do it 364 days a year until I drive people around me nuts.
So we can go to the source of that enigmatic phrase, the unbirthday.
And enigmatic is the perfect word to describe Alice in Wonderland, Alice's adventures in Wonderland. I wanted to take us into the 12th chapter of that book. Poor Alice, she lives in this world of anarchy. She's entered this world with wonders, but also many scary things. And you would think that in a chapter where she's in a courtroom, you're finally going to get rules and order and,
One would hope, but having been in a courtroom.
Yes, but what first of all, the jury box is tipped over. The jurymen are upside down. Then Alice tries to create order. She puts the lizard into the jury box. Turns out he's upside down. So, she's having all this trouble. And then suddenly the king says to her, "What do you know about this business?" "Nothing," said Alice. "Nothing whatever?" persisted the king. "Nothing whatever," said Alice. "That's very important," the king said, turning to the jury. They were just beginning to write this down on their slates when the white rabbit interrupted. "Unimportant, your majesty means, of course." He said it in a very respectful tone, but frowning and making faces at him as he spoke. "Unimportant, of course," the king hastily said, and went on to himself in an undertone. "Important, unimportant, unimportant, important," as if he were trying which word sounded best. An extraordinary moment, I think, because we're caught up in this nonsense and the challenge to make sense of it, to figure out, what is Alice going to do in this situation? And suddenly we hear that the word important, is just like unimportant, and the meaning is irrelevant. What is important? What sounds best? So it's suddenly as if, beauty, the beauty of the word and sound trumps meaning. And that to me is just a staggering statement about Wonderland. And, does it make it better or worse? It certainly creates a kind of existential crisis, because when you lose meaning, what do you do? You're in this vortex.
certainly have to mention, in light of that, sort of a Ben Yagoda, The Sound on the Page, one of his books, in the sense that even in the ancient times, and I think this goes to the fireside, we keep alluding to readings by the campfire and readings by the flickering campfire in the night, kids sitting around the campfire and maybe some ghosts and goblins in the background in the dark. But the thing is it's always the sound. And the ancient art of telling stories out, or saying stories, telling stories out loud before they were ever written down, right?
Oh, yes, the sound of the word, and accompanied. I love the fact that you said accompanied by light. And sometimes it's the campfire, the fireside. It can be a candle or the, you know, proverbial flashlight under the sheets. And not just the light, but also the shadows.
Proverbial or unproverbial?
Or well, let's see which sounds best. I like unproverbial. Yes.
So, by the way, I just want to mention, so the title of the show, the overarching, is, you know, Wonder Where Alice in Wonderland Went, which is not easy. I invite you to say that as fast as you can. Wonder Where Alice in Wonderland Went. And this is the report from the rabbit hole. And Dr. J is trying to lead the charge. But the problem is, for any kids that are listening, and even as Lewis Carroll said, we're but older kids. Older children. For those of us that never did grow up in the Peter Pan sense, I am right now on my Nimbus 2000 flying around the ceiling of the studio here. I have not stopped. I'm talking. I have a microphone in my left hand and I have the broomstick in my right. I'm near the ceiling now and Jane is on a magic carpet. So I don't know about Professor Tatar, but are you actually on the ground? Somewhere?
I am drinking this strange liquid, which is shrinking me.
No.
Oh, no. How big? Oh, my God. How?
And I have this little cake, and I don't know whether to try it or not, because it tells me something strange about, what are the words on this? Eat me, right. So we are going down the rabbit hole. We've lost our footing. And, words becoming meaningless. I always think of that exercise. Children are so profound. Do you remember when, as a kid, you used to take a word like toy boat and repeat it?
Toy boat, endlessly? Toy boat.
You asked me. I could not repeat the title of the show more than, you know, I'm not sure I could do it once. But try toy boat 10 times.
I will in my sleep.
Are you game?
I'm going to do it in my sleep, but here's my concern. You started this little episodic venture here by saying that you were shrinking. So as far as I can measure, you are now 2 inches tall. I mean, that's what my ruler says. Now, am I right?
I've just grown and I'm stuck in this house.
Oh, now you went from 2 inches?
Okay, well, my suggestion is that if you are changing size, but the cake isn't, that you eat it when you're small, because then you'll get more. If it looks like it's tasty.
That's true. If your mouth is small and the cake is big, that would mean
a bigger piece of cake.
Right, but if you're big and the cake is small, you might... Oh, my God. I think we're on to something.
I love the way that, you know, we try to use logic to understand Alice in Wonderland. That is, you know, we keep trying to puzzle out these things. We're just caught in this endless hall of mirrors. And, you know, it becomes then, the logic turns to lack of logic and fun and fantasy and wonders.
Yeah, and it sounds like this is a way, I'm just thinking of if everybody is buried in their own mobile device, that even though they may be reading, and we've talked about how Kindle, you know, reminds us of the fireside, you know, the campfire. But if we're not sharing verbal expressions and hearing the sounds of words from other people and reading together, or actually, I suppose, doing anything
or
together.
Or separately.
You sound like you're from Alice in Wonderland.
I am.
Wonderland,
believe
yes.
Believe that.
Then you know, we're missing something.
We are, but we are also gaining something.
What about, are we missing everything? Or you say we're gaining something, and Jane said we're missing something.
Oh, we're missing something.
Oh.
Well, yes, I think any new technology, though, there's going to be an upside and a downside.
Really? Oh, no. Not again.
No, not again.
More or less? Is that more or less?
Am I repeating myself?
No, no. I just wondered if that was more or less what you meant.
I think that the ability to connect with people all over the world, global in terms of communications and to start conversations with I could do that with colleagues and students all over the world.
But you're not growing up with that. I mean, I think that is, and there's a lot of educational exercises, I don't mean to mean that it just has to be serious and educational every time you do anything, but granting what you're saying, it definitely broadens everyone's horizons. But as far as being the embodied person, we are in a body. We have relationships with people that are in the same physical space as we are.
Right.
And the quality of the relationship is so different that...
Well, I'm not.
How can
I'm
we,
not. I object.
You're not.
I object
in a body.
Because one, I'm of a separate ilk.
And I
what
can
I mean,
see you.
What I mean, well, you could.
Okay.
You can. But not for long.
Because that's right. You're the Cheshire Cat.
I'm the Cheshire Cat. Well, I was. I was here. I've just turned invisible.
Okay.
And the problem is that you don't know if I'm still sitting on my broomstick going around the room. Do you see the broomstick, Jane?
No, I'm thinking about it on your huge group of thousands or tens of thousands of, quote, friends, unquote.
That's a good one. Can you name one? Can you name one? Maria, I apologize for my behavior here.
So with that, the subjective, I think the literature helps us develop a sense of the subjective, and that is what technology and the engineers who create it have such a tough time with. You know, they want to make an algorithm to determine who likes them best or who they're closest to.
Off of the show.
Okay.
Oh. I'm kidding. Okay, we're going to go to the next. We're going to tie this up. We're going to move on. Are we going to move up or down?
Oh, for our next segment.
Yes.
That's right.
We're done.
Okay,
for the
we're on the chessboard.
Okay.
We're on the chessboard.
We'll join you back at the chessboard
in
just a moment.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
This moment of uncontrollable laughter was made possible by a 32-year-old man with little to no coordination attempting to execute a simple cartwheel. His name is Sergeant Warner, but young James, our laughing friend here, simply calls him Dad. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
I want to tell everyone that's listening, and even those that aren't, that I'm not going to wish you a happy unbirthday this segment. Jane, would you, doc, will somebody take over for me because I'm flying on the ceiling?
Okay.
Thank you.
We're talking with Dr. Maria Tatar from Harvard University, and it's amazing that she's still talking to us.
She wasn't talking. She's silent.
Always a pleasure.
Could you demystify Jim's Unbirthday? Tell us, for anyone who hasn't read the literary work he's alluding to, where the Unbirthday came from.
Oh, well, Jim, who actually says it? Happy Unbirthday to you?
I can't reveal that. That's confidential, privileged information.
Quality of Wonderland is that you can say one thing and then say the opposite, and there may not be such a great difference. There's a kind of collapsing of difference. But, yes, Alice is on this quest in Wonderland, and I thought maybe we could just talk about trips, quests.
Okay.
In children's literature, trying to go back sometimes. And there's a wonderful novel by Neil Gaiman called The Ocean at the End of the Lane.
Ooh.
And it begins with the protagonist, the eye of the story, we don't know his name, who's going to a funeral in his hometown. And he decides to take a car ride. And here are his words. The slick black road became narrower, windier, became the single lane track I remembered from my childhood, became packed earth and knobbly, bone-like flints. Soon I was driving slowly, bumpily down a narrow lane with brambles and briar roses on each side. Wherever the edge was not a stand of hazels or a wild hedgerow. It felt like I had driven back in time. That lane was how I remembered it, when nothing else was. So this is a moment. I just love the fact that he is moving through this hedge of briars. So it's kind of like he's become the prince in Sleeping Beauty. He's in search of, and he has the sense of driving back in time. And in fact, he does go back to the place where he grew up, and he remembers, he begins to remember his childhood. So he does go back, and he takes us back with him, and we experience all the terrors, horrors, and the beauty of his childhood. So that is what a book can do. And to me, reading this book was one of those immersive, actually water is very important in that work, but it was this immersive experience where you were just with him back there.
And that is The Ocean at the End of the Lane.
Hmm? Right.
Well, that's interesting. And everything you read and describe, there's always a sense of atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Gaiman certainly creates that. I wish I could take credit for it.
I did give you credit for it. I sent that to you. I will say, though, that atmosphere, Edith Wharton talks about that in terms of the theory of fiction and the idea. But, you know, isn't it true that, like, from Harry Potter all the way to Alice in Wonderland and back and Peter Pan, I mean, the atmosphere of flying with Peter Pan, I mean, just the mood. It's like a mood/atmosphere, or I might say, so Jane doesn't give me the look, an atmosphere/mood.
Oh, there is something exhilarating about it. We've talked a lot about flying in children's literature.
Mm.
You know, this feeling that you're up there, you're in control, you're looking down on everything. You know, I just refer to immersive reading, where you're kind of down under, and you're submerged, and you know, you are living in the same world. You're breathing the same air. Fascinating to look at the kinds of metaphors we create for the reading experience to try to capture being there.
Yeah, there's an analogy, too, that I've never heard before, but I thought of because I was actually really upset because I was watching the birds in the sky, and they were soaring, and having a great time and singing. And I was sort of jealous of him because I want to fly. I want to fly like birds. And then I was, as in my sort of down and out mood, it hit me that swimming is as close as we get. In other words, the birds fly in a substance called air, and they have to flap their wings to stay up there, unless, of course, there's an up current. But anyway, in a pool or an ocean at the end of the lane, I can swim in the water, but I have to flap my arms.
You have to flap your... You know, there's a wonderful video on the New York Times website called Slow-Mo. Slow-Mo, which is a story, it's almost like a little film, actually, a narrative about a retired doctor who has just given up everything, gone to San Diego, and all he does all day long is rollerblade. Because he get, and you watch him rollerblading, and he looks just like a bird. He lifts his leg and his arm, and it's a little bit like a bird, but also like a dolphin, and there is something about gliding, which, you know, makes us feel good. And we can do it in real life, and we can do it in through fiction as well.
And it's oddly uplifting.
Uplifting, exactly. Transcendental, if we want to move to the philosophers.
Okay, I have a quick question. So, you have these Harvard students in your classroom, so can you share with us, and hopefully maybe they'll even listen to this show, because we'd love them to listen to you, and at least Dr. J, and ignore me, the idea that what is the most fascinating thing you've heard them say in the last 73 years?
Oh boy, that's a tough one, and I think... What have they said? I'm thinking of individual comments. I think the big surprise for me was the vividness with which they will remember something like Turkish Delight in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and how, you know, they fasten onto a story like Lois Lowry's Number the Stars, which they put under their pillow at night when they were young, because it was a story that told them that they too could be heroic.
Interesting.
That, you know, a child can be a hero. I think what has surprised me the most of late is that I realize that I do not, when it comes to Harry Potter, this is in many ways, it's kind of the end of the Harry Potter generation. That is the kids who actually grew up with Harry, who started reading the books at ages 8 or 9 or something like that. But when they start talking about Harry Potter, I'm totally lost. That they have this language, again, you know, they must have had this immersive experience, or they must have been soaring on those broomsticks, because they are suddenly transported back, and they talk in a way that, you know, I don't understand their language anymore.
It's like that Nimbus 2000.
They're fluent.
Yeah, they're fluent.
They're totally fluent in that world. And it's not quite that they don't go back into it, but they bond with each other in such powerful ways as they laugh about, you know, various characters and Crookshank or... some incident that captured their attention.
I wanted to just insert really quickly that as we wrap up the show here and appreciate you coming on the show, etc., I want everyone to keep an eye on, if they can, they can see it, the slow arrow of beauty while we leave the studio. Thank you very much. And I'm still here. I didn't really leave. I was just kidding. Anyway, this has been great. Report from the rabbit hole, Professor Tatar. Jane, take over, will you, so I don't screw up again.
Well, thank you very much for visiting with us again, Dr. Tatar. And for our listeners, thank you for sharing the show with others you know. And we appreciate any thoughts you have for us. Go to our website, thesocialnetworkstation.com. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Any parting words? Any parting words, Professor Tatar?
Always a delight to talk to you.
Okay. Well, we'll be back with more reports from the rabbit hole soon, and thank you for listening.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.